begin on Daf Chof Dalid Amud Aleph. Two, four, six lines before the line spread. Six lines before it spreads, you got Bo'i Minei Rav Yosef. We're beginning a new discussion. Bo'i Minei Rav Yosef. Okay. Six lines before it spreads, by Minei Rav Yosef. I want to preface this sugya a little bit because we're really introducing a new principle here, similar to what we've been seeing, but really a new subtopic. We've already seen earlier that there are isurim d'oraisa to engage in kedusha-oriented activities when there's filth around, in the presence of filth. Right, we see that the Isur D'oraisa of Ahaya Machaneh HaKadosh, your camp should be holy, which means it should be pure. Now we're moving on to the next element of this concept, and that is you should not engage in any kedusha oriented activities, no learning Torah, brachas, tefillas, etc., in the area of nakedness, where there's nakedness present. This is another Isur D'oraisa. Lo yireh b'cho erev hazdava, there shall not be seen anything, any nakedness among you when you are busy interacting with Hashem. Now this, as we've seen with regard to filth, there's the Isurim d'Oraisas involved here, and there are also Isurim d'Rabbanan, and we're going to move through this slowly because this is very fundamental in Halacha and it breaks into a lot of subcategories. So now, before we begin the sugya, I wanted to put it into a little bit of perspective, because again, I don't want to approach this sugya with the feeling that the whole thing is kind of technical, meaning we have more respectable parts of the body, we have less respectable parts of the body, and it's inappropriate to be davening when that's around, so you have to cover it, and that begins and ends with that. There's something much bigger going on here. So I want to take a step back for a minute to just give some perspective on this whole discussion. Why do we wear clothing? Sounds like a silly question, right? Why do we wear clothing? Now, if you'll answer me, what's that? Adam Arishai. Right. I'm going to get to Adam Arishai. Why do Adam Arishai wear clothing? So, if you'll answer me, well, you have to be modest. You can't have the base parts of your bodies exposed. What's wrong with a loincloth? Is it just because shirts came into style? Pants? What's wrong with a loincloth? Wouldn't that do the job? Now, again, I'm you know me by now, I'm something of a religious fanatic, and I'm of the school of thought that anything that isn't firmly rooted in the Torah doesn't need to be a part of our lives. So, can you show me where in the Torah there's a value in clothing beyond the loincloth? It would seem the only religious purpose in clothing is to cover your nakedness. Anything more than that? What's that? Kehani, Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael. But the truth is, you're right. But the truth is, let's go back to Adam Arishon. Adam Arishon, the truth is that this back and forth was something Adam Arishon had with Hashem. Adam Arishon initially didn't wear clothing at all. Then something happened, and we'll explain exactly what happened. Now, he realized that he should be wearing clothing because he realized that to be naked is problematic, and therefore he made himself a loincloth. That's what he made himself initially, right? He says they made belts of leather. What's that, a loincloth? He did. And then, what happened was, Hashem made him, it says, kosnois or. He made them robes. Adam Arishon initially made a belt, a loincloth, and then Hashem made him a robe. There were two stages. Right? First it says, v'yitfiru alei teino. After they fell into the Eitz Hadas, they made belts of fig leaf. Right? But Hashem said, no, that's not good enough.
Hashem made them robes. So what was going on? Adam HaRishon was reasoning what I did. We've reached a state where it's immoral to have your nakedness exposed. Got to cover that up. And Hashem said, no, that's not enough. You have to wear a robe. So let's understand well both stages of the reasoning. Because this is really important. The truth is that it's important in understanding our functional life in general. I know you're going to say that I say this about everything. But the truth is that, yeah, it's basically true about almost anything that is Torah-oriented. What happened at the Eitz HaDa'as? How come beforehand they felt fine being without clothing? Was it because at that point they were primitive and then they became more sophisticated? They grew? They grew in their understanding? Is that what happened? No. Certainly, putting on clothing at that point was a step up, but it reflected the fact that they had dropped a level, and that's why there was a need for clothing now. Initially, Adam HaRishon was in a situation, Adam and Chava were in a situation where they weren't yodea toiv v'ra, the way the Torah puts it, a little bit cryptic. They didn't know good and evil. What does it mean they didn't know good and evil? He was able to choose the wrong thing. He did choose the wrong thing, right? What does it mean he didn't know good and evil? What it means is that he didn't experience it. He didn't sense it. Today, you know, you walk through a street, person will see somebody who's not dressed properly, the body starts working, right? There's an automatic natural reaction to these things. That's called yodea ra. We sense the bad. Our body tingles, right? This is human nature at this point. Adam HaRishon at that point wasn't like that. Everything, it was technical. When he connected with his wife, sure there was pleasure when he connected with his wife. But the way the Sfarim put it is that there wasn't, the Yetzer Hara was chitzoni, it wasn't pnimi. It was external, it wasn't internal. Meaning, he didn't have that natural lust, right? It wasn't like seeing something got him going. He was detached from that. Made a decision that he was now going to be with his wife. He did that, he enjoyed it, but it was technicality. It was like, you know, there are some pleasures in this world that you decide you're going to do it, you do it. But before him, it's not like you feel yourself, you know, you feel these crazy feelings that we all know. Right? Let's say it's a book, okay? A book looks interesting. You decide you're going to read it, you enjoy it. As long as it's on the shelf, when you're contemplating reading it, it's not like you just can't pull your eyes away from it. That's how Adam HaRishon was at that point. Why? Because he was much less physically conscious. His spirituality formed so much more of his consciousness. The body was much less a part of who he was. And it was a technical thing. They could walk through the street with undressed people around and it didn't mean anything to them. It was like seeing an interesting book on a shelf. You don't feel like this urge, this draw. Decide to read it, you'll read it. Right? Then what happened was, when they ate it, and this is what it really means, that they became Yodei Tov Hara. All of a sudden it became an inherent part of him. An internal part of him, of man and woman. Right? The draw, the lure, which beforehand had been something theoretical, now became very real. And all of a sudden, he became coarser. After eating from the Eitz HaDa'as, they became coarser. They became much more connected to their physical body, like we are, right? They became much more connected to their physical body, and all of a sudden, when Adam saw his wife, and when she saw him, they suddenly started having these feelings that they didn't feel before, and they realized that this was a serious drop. They were suddenly having base feelings that they were supposed to be way above. Man is not supposed to be. These are animalistic feelings. Man doesn't feel these things. It's not a part of man's existence. But they had dropped. Man had dropped. Man wasn't what it was anymore. Yes, man now had an animalistic side to him, which we still have today. So Adam understood that we have to cover it up. Adam and his wife understood that we have to cover that up. Okay? Stops with that. You say something?
Wasn't the reaction though of Husha?
What's that? Oh, yes.
Oh,
no, he didn't go after something. The fact that he now felt this was a cause for terrible shame. He realized the unbelievable drop that he had just experienced because of what he did. Yes, it wasn't like he suddenly felt this and so he went running towards it. He felt this and he said, oh boy, look what happened to me. That was the busha that he felt. That's why they went to hide. They didn't know what to do with themselves. They couldn't believe the state they were in now. Okay? So now, they wore long clothes. That solves the problem from a technical aspect. But Hashem came and said that that's not good enough. Why? Because the truth is that, again, what had happened now? They became coarser. This was something physical also. The body actually became coarser. The body was much more refined and spiritual beforehand, the physical body. The body became coarser now, and something that the Ramchal describes in Das Tumos. And now, they were physical people. In other words, now man took on the look of basically the beasts around him. A little less fur, right? But what does the world out there consider man to be? The most intelligent of beasts, right? More developed, right? Further technologically more advanced than the other animals around us. But basically man turned into a body like any of the beasts around him. It wasn't like beforehand there was absolutely no comparison. Man, it says, was so great that the Malachim, I don't know what this means, I'm quoting Medrash, but that the Malachim almost said Shira to him. They were ready to say Shira to him. That's how great man was. And then man suddenly dropped miles down and became the most intelligent of beasts, potentially. Now, this is a big problem because man is not the most intelligent of beasts. Man is indeed a completely different realm. Just that the problem is now he's attached to his body. He senses his body a lot more than he senses who he really is. And therefore Hashem was coming and saying, there's more than just covering up the nakedness here. It doesn't begin and end with that. You're going to cover up your nakedness, but you're going to walk around like a caveman with your nakedness covered. You are going to continue living that misconception that man is basically a beast. Right? Look at yourself. Fine. You're covered. Your nakedness is covered. But your body is not a respectable looking thing. It's basically an animalistic hunk of flesh. Right? And therefore Hashem is coming and saying, no, now you have a whole level of effort that you're going to need to put in now to retain the awareness of who man really is. This is why we wear clothing. This is why Hashem came and said, no, a loincloth won't do. Put on robes. We cover up. The face still has a certain remnant of human glory. Look at the face. It's supposed to inspire you. You see the intelligence of man, etc. But the rest of the body, basically, you know, you need your hand for, you need to use it. But the rest of the body we cover up so as to hide that misconception that man is the most intelligent of beasts. No, we're not. That's why we call clothing, mani nechabdus, clothing are our dignity, the Gemara says. Clothing is what sets man apart from animal. Right? It reminds us that no, our status, we're not just the most intelligent of beasts. It's not just a pile of flesh. We hide that pile of flesh. Why hide it? That's not really who we are. That's really what clothing are. The point being really there's something deeper going on here. The point is we want to remain conscious of who we really are. This is what clothing are coming to accomplish. And therefore, a very fundamental part of our Kedusha, right, when we're actually coming and engaging in different Kedusha, a very fundamental part of it is to remember that we're operating at a different level. We are not just Olam HaZeniks, right? We're not just the most intelligent of animals, that we engage in our beastly, animalistic activities, and we also do different Kedusha. When we're interacting with Hashem, we're raising above all that. We're not acknowledging that. We're raising above it. Right? And we are obviously included in that is that we're covering up anything that can bring out those base instincts, those base feelings in us. So here we have to stress that the truth is we're covering what we're ashamed of. What are we ashamed of? Are we ashamed of, let's say, of our nakedness? Is that organ a disgrace to man? There were philosophers who said that yes. The organ, the reproductive organ is a disgrace to man. We don't believe that. What we do believe is that what it does to us, or what it can do to us, is a disgrace to man. And therefore, we're covering up so as to create a situation where we can live above it. And here also we understand the ludicrous, or how backward it is when people use clothing, right? On the contrary, to bring out the body, to accentuate the body. The whole point is, we're putting it behind, we're locking it away, right? Now, because again, a whole objective of our life is to raise above these base feelings. Now, when you're at the time when you actually, like Adam Arishan, when he decided he was going to connect with Chava, oh yes, certainly when they were actually connecting, they experienced pleasure as we experienced. I don't know if it's exactly the same way. They were, like we said, different sort of being. So when we decide that, you know, we need to engage in it, then on the contrary, it's a conscious decision, we expose it, and then it's not base. Then it's the decision to go ahead and using it for what it's meant to be used for. That's really the depth, some of the depth behind the concept of tznius for a woman, right? Is a woman basically always advertising her capability of turning man on? Or is that not what she is and that's not what he is? No. She utilizes that power that she has today, right? That power is more than it was before the chet. Today there's a certain charge in the air that is the result of the fact that man became a more base person. But again, man is supposed to live above that. And the woman also. And she keeps man above that by completely locking it away. When does she open it? She opens it when it's in place. But therefore we understand that when a woman is coming and actually accentuating that part, right? You can do that with clothing that cover the whole body also. Right? That's where the issue of tznius and all the fine points of tznius come in. She's completely defeating the purpose. She's bringing man back down to that base level. When a woman is at with the proper tznius, then on the contrary, when she does expose it to her husband, when she does get together with her husband, it makes that all the more valuable also, because here their mom is showing, yes, we live at a higher level, except for what it's meant to be used for. Right? Outside of that, we're in a different place. When it's meant to be used, it's like food, right? It's very different than food. This is one of the most sublime activities that there is when it's approached in the right way. Then, we unleash the power in the fullest way. But other than that, we place ourselves in a higher sphere. We don't have those base sensations operating within us all the time. We live in a higher place. We're not just the most intelligent of beasts. So, that's also what these halachas are very much meant to bring across. We train ourselves to operate on a higher level, where any of these things, all the base instincts, we simply put away. We rise above them. We're not animals who can also engage in intellectual activities like many of the non-Jewish great intellectuals are. We're not animals who can also operate and do intellectual things. We completely live above that animalistic level. So now let's see.
The Rav was just talking about your Yad Tova Ra. The Rav spoke just about the Ra, the way you spoke about the libido. I understood the Ra to extend to all Yad Tova Ra. That's what they definitely get to that. Can you set me straight?
Somehow, apparently it does. Apparently, this ultimately extends to the full scale of Yetzirah also. Most directly in this area is perhaps what most brings out man's base elements. But in Achnami, the truth is that yes, when they sunk to that level, it reached a point where again, they became controlled by their urges. And until then, in complete control, man was in complete control of his urges. Adam made an intellectual mistake when he decided to go ahead with it. Right? But yeah, it reached a situation where, as we know today, we're not just controlled by this urge, we're controlled by all kinds of urges. There are all kinds of other things that can get us going in the wrong directions also. Okay, so now I want to begin this, we'll begin this sugya just from this perspective. Just pointing out, we shouldn't just approach this as an issue of technicalities. This represents in a big way the essence of who we are as people. So let's see, now we dive right into the what we'll call the nitty gritty. Boy mine Rav Yosef, Breder Rav Nechunya, mir Rav Yehuda. Rav Yosef, Breder Rav Nechunya, esk Rav Yehuda. Shnaim sheyeshenim b'mito achas. If you have two people sleeping together in bed, generally in those days people slept completely undressed. So Chavdalet Amud Aleph, six lines before it spreads. Chavdalet Amud Aleph, six lines before it spreads. Mao shezeyach zirpana v'yikra kriyashma, v'zeyach zirpana v'yikra kriyashma. Is it permitted for each of them to turn the other way and say kriyashma? Now, usually, a person will only be with his wife or perhaps a child in bed in this way. But the question is that permissible? Now, what's the problem here? If you turn the other way, what's the problem? The problem is that your bodies are in contact, and that you're feeling the other person's body. Okay? So now, let's note already that even before we address the Gemara's question, there's already a given here. To lie in bed with another undressed person facing each other and to say Kriya Shema is definitely prohibited. Why? So here is the Issa D'Oraisa. This is where we're introducing here. We have to keep track of the different categories we're going to be coming across. The most blatant Issa D'Oraisa is to say Kriya Shema facing an Erva. Facing an Erva means, in the most basic level, actual nakedness. The reproductive organ of the man or of the woman. The reproductive part of the body. Okay? That is the most basic Issa D'Oraisa, to say the very Kedusha facing that. Now, here we have to note. I'm sorry? Oh, we're going to get to that. What's that? Oh, okay, good. I'm going to put that on hold for a minute, and now we're going to actually address what you just said. The Issa to say Brachas or Kriya Shema, etc., facing an Erva, means not only somebody else's. The issue here is not the temptation, the lust. That's not the problem. That's a problem too, but that's not the issue here. The issue is the very fact that you're facing an erva, and therefore it applies to your own as well. Right? Anytime there's an erva visible, whether your own or somebody else's, whether another man's, even your own, like we said before, anytime an erva is, that's the most basic issa d'oraisa. And then there's nothing to talk about. You certainly cannot say any divrei kedusha facing an erva. Oh, that we're going to discuss. That we're going to discuss as we go on. Now, you're asking, aren't they covered up under a blanket? Right. So they are covered up under a blanket, and therefore, we move on to another element of this issa. So Rashi says that the problem here is that when they're facing each other, the erva of one's body is touching the other's body. Come on, people who are close together in bed, they didn't have king-size beds. So here, this is already step number two. Let's keep track of this. Seeing another person's erva is an issa, but now we're seeing even more than that. Even if they're covered with a blanket, being in contact with another person's erva is an issa. So that the Gemara is not even asking. That's clear. Facing or touching another an erva is a problem. What's that? The most basic d'oraisa is facing. Touching is probably a d'oraisa as well. Now, so what is the Gemara asking? The Gemara is asking, what happens if they turn around? If they turn their backs, and now they're touching each other, still in contact, but it's from the back. Now, is this an erva? That's question number one. The fact that the rear ends are touching each other. That's question number one. And question number two is, and here we come to another element, even if something is not, strictly speaking, an erva, but it can turn you on, it can cause thoughts, right, it can cause sensations, that's another problem. Okay, so let's keep track of this, because this is going to be important. There's erva, that has nothing to do with whether it makes you feel anything or not. Your own erva, nobody gets turned on by their own erva. Erva is a problem, period. Then there's another problem, of being in a situation that you're being turned on by something that you see or feel, even if it's not an erva per se. So that's what the Gemara is asking right now. The Gemara is asking, you're turning your ervas away from each other. Nobody sees an erva, nobody feels an erva. But you're touching from the back. Is that a problem? So So, Omar Le, he answered, Hachi Omar Shmuel. Here's what Shmuel said. Afilu ishto imay. It's permitted. This is not a problem. Touching for the back, we don't assume, will cause the wrong feelings. Even if someone is with his wife in bed. The Gemara says, Maskif lo Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef challenges that. You're implying that even if it's your wife, it's okay. And certainly if it's somebody else. Adarabha, the other way around. Ishtoi kegufoi. His wife is like his body, meaning a person is accustomed to his wife. Perhaps feeling her from the back won't necessarily turn him on. But achelav kegufoi. But somebody else is, you're not accustomed to, it's not like your body, you're not accustomed to that, and that might cause sensations. So Rav Yosef is disagreeing with Shmuel. He's saying, your wife, I can hear that each of you turning around and facing the other direction can be acceptable. But with a different person, that is certainly likely to cause problematic sensations. What's that?
You're not supposed to be in bed with somebody other than your wife.
Oh, so first of all, we're obviously not talking about a female here. You're asking, why would a person be in bed with a male? So the truth is, we're going to see now that we're obviously not talking about a stranger. But in earlier times, if there was only one bed in the house, it is conceivable that a person might have been with his children in bed. And that's what we'll see coming up now. Now, Nesivit. So whatever it is, so let's know. What do we have? We have a machloikis. Everyone agrees that one's wife is okay. Again, if you both turn to the other direction, the machloikis is, what if it's somebody else? So Neisaveh. So we're going to challenge Shmuel. Let's see, Shmuel said everything is okay. Now I'll add also that this is certainly not palatable to people from our times, but it's possible that in earlier times, maybe people were in bed at the same time, in the most literal sense, meaning there wasn't anything problematic going on, but I don't know if people were on the road together or whatever it is, and people needed to sleep in close proximity. Certainly not a recommended practice, but I don't know if maybe the reality of earlier times created such situations. I don't know. But we'll see now. Mason, so the Gemara is going to challenge Shmuel. Shnayim sheyeshenim b'mito achas. If you have two people sleeping together in one bed, zemav v'ponav v'koyre. What's that? Poverty. That's right. We see that there was such a thing when in times of poverty, when you had people sharing accommodations, and right. There are certainly situations where. Right. So on the contrary, we have to say that we're lucky today that we can't really conceive of these things. But yes, there were realities in earlier times. So, Shnayim she'yishenu b'mita achas. So Braisa says, if you have two people sleeping together in one bed, zeh machzir panav v'koyre, v'zeh machzir panav v'koyre. Each one turns his face the other way, and they can say, Kriyat Shema, the fact that they're touching from the back is okay. Fine. That's very good. V'tanya achrisi. But we have another brisa that says, "Hayoshen b'mita." If someone is sleeping in bed, ubanav ubnei beisai betzidai, and his children or family members are lying alongside him, harezel lo yikra kriyashma. He is not allowed to recite kriyashma, elaim kein hoisa talis mafsekes beinehim, unless there's a sheet. Talis here doesn't mean the talis you wear in shul, right? It means a sheet. Unless there's a sheet between you, so you don't feel the other person's flesh. What's that? No, even if they're turned around. There's a contradiction between the braises. Right, one braise says turning around is good enough. The other braise says no, there must be a sheet in between.
But the second braise doesn't say that it could be that it's not turned around.
What's that? That's why it's about. But it says that the only way to read is by having a talis in between. There's a simpler way to turn around. Lo yikra kriyashma elein kein, right? That's not lo yikra elein kein, right? You cannot read kriyashma unless you turn around. Unless you have a sheet in between. V'im ha'yu banu v'bnei beisai ketanim. However, if your children are young, muta, it's okay. What does young mean? We'll see soon. This is, here we're touching on what you asked before. What's the age? We'll see soon. But whatever it is, we have a contradiction in Brisa. See, the first Brisa said, you're with somebody else in bed, turn around, everything's fine. Next Brisa said, no, you have to have a sheet in between. So now, Bishlama de Rabbi Yosef Loikash. According to Rabbi Yosef, this is not a problem, because we already showed that it depends who you're with in bed. Habi ishtoi, habi ache. The first Brisa that permits it is with your wife. Right? Rabbi Yosef said, the person who's lying back to back with his wife is okay. The second brisa which prohibits it refers to other people. As Rav Yosef said, if you're with someone else in bed who's not your wife, back to back is no good. You would have to have a sheet in between. Elul Shmuel. But according to Shmuel, he said it doesn't matter if it's your wife or somebody else. Kasha. How are we going to resolve it? We have contradictory brises. One says yes, one says no. So Omar Loch Shmuel. Shmuel says, "Le'Rav Yosef minicha." According to Rav Yosef, it is understandable. He's saying, "Well, yes." One Bryce is saying yes. One Bryce is saying no. It doesn't matter, because the one that says no means if it's not his wife, wife is okay. Is that so? V'Tanya. The Bryce says, "Hayayashem b'mita." What did the Bryce say? The Bryce said, "If you're sleeping in bed, ubanav ubnei beisai b'mita, and you have your children or family members in bed." Which family members would you have in bed other than your children? B'nei Beisai means your wife. Right? The household members other than your children are your wife. Lo yikra kriyashma. Yet the Brisa says, even with your wife, do not say kriyashma by simply turning around. Sorry? What's that? Okay. So the truth is, we do sometimes find that metaphorically they refer to their wives as B'nai Beisai. We find, for example, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah saying, Ezil ve'imalich be'inche Beisai. I'm going to go and consult with my household members. He meant I'm going to consult with my wife. Right? But the truth is that you're right in not feeling comfortable with B'nai Beisai, household members meaning wife. Tosis raises this, he says, we don't find that it specifically refers to a wife. Right? It could refer to any household member. So Taisu says that, yeah, if you see the little base there before the Banavu B'nei Beisai, says that no, the Gemara is actually bringing in a different price that it should read a little differently. It's a price that says explicitly, even if you have your wife with you in bed, you cannot say Kriya Shema until you have a sheet in between. So be that as it may, either we're inferring it from the Brisa, or the Brisa states explicitly that Lamaisa, no, you cannot say Kriya Shema back to back with your wife. So if so, however you slice it, we have a contradiction. Everybody stated above, Rav Yosef and Shmuel all agree that the wife is okay. They only disputed what about a different person. Here we clearly have a Brisa saying that even your wife is a problem. Elen ken hoisel talisoy mafsekes b'neim, unless you have a sheet in between them. So however you slice it, you have a problem. Because one Brisa says it's fine, the other Brisa says it's no good even with your wife. So, Elamai Yisloch Lameima, what must we answer? Ishtoi le Rav Yosef Tanoi. Rav Yosef will have to concede that even though he says it's okay to recite Kriya Shema back to back with your wife, other Tanoim say not. Meaning that we have a machloikis in the Brisa. Some Tanoim agree with it, some Tanoim say no. So Shmuel will say, so I'll also say Tanoihi, that also with regard to others, you're right, there's a Brisa that says don't recite Kriya Shema with others in bed, but a different Brisa says that you can. I understand that it's not referring only to your wife. So yes, we have a machlokes Tanoim, not only whether you can recite Kriya Shema with your wife in bed, but whether you can recite Kriya Shema with others in bed either. So Lamaisa, what do we conclude? We conclude that there is actually a three-way machloikis, three-level machloikis. There is the opinion that says you cannot say Kriya Shema lying back to back with your wife. Then there's the opinion that says, well, with your wife, yes, but with others, not. And then there's the opinion that says, even with others, it's okay. Otsaloch. Here again, I don't think it's going to be all that relevant. Although it could be. It could be, right? Sometimes, maybe if their person is with his wife, they're falling asleep. I want to say hamapil afterwards. The question is, will you have to get dressed? So, the ma'isa da'alocha, we paskin that with others it's prohibited, with a person's wife it's okay. What's that? Well, we're using Shva as the example, but it applies to any Divrei Kedusha. Okay. Now, I'll just note, though, that Lamais and the Poskim say that, yes, essentially the halacha follows the opinion that it's okay with one's wife, but it's better not to do so. It's better to be machmir and follow the opinion that says not to do it. I mean, it's best to avoid it. This is the Shulchan Aruch cites both opinions. So yes, the halacha follows the opinion that it's okay back to back with your wife, but he cites the opinion that says not and says it's best to avoid it. Okay. We move on. So again, let's just sum up what we've seen here meanwhile. Because collect the crumbs of halacha that are falling as we move along. So again, what we've seen here is that to be facing an erva is definitely a no-no. To be touching an erva, to be in contact with an erva, I mean flesh to flesh, is definitely a no-no. The question is, we've seen that if you are touching a person in a way, if you're in a position that can cause sensations, that's also a problem. But a machlokes whether being back to back is considered to be such a situation. But the principles that we see is facing an erva or touching an erva, no. Any other situation that causes problematic sensations, even if it's not an erva, is also a problem.
So now, being covered up at all,
I'm sorry?
Being covered in a towel, being covered with a sheet, there's no. Am I talking about that at all?
If a person is completely covered with a sheet, meaning
they're back to back, back to sheet,
back to back. The whole discussion is where there's no sheet. Once there is a sheet, it's definitely okay. Once there is a sheet, it's definitely okay.
Between them,
yes, absolutely, yeah, between them. The whole discussion here of the Gemara is flesh to flesh.
Because there's only one Braisa, I think, but
well, the Braisa kept saying that when it's usher unless there's a sheet between them, right? Once there's a sheet between them, it's definitely okay. Okay. So that we will note. Again, even though we said that it's recommended to be machmir and not to say brachos or recite Kriya Shema back to back with your wife, once there's a sheet in between, it's definitely okay. There's no reason, there's no need to be machmir. And the place can stress that means even just like from the waist down. If you're touching back to back mamish, but there's a sheet from the waist down, that's okay. What's that?
Pajamas.
Without. The sheet is the pajamas.
Yeah, one or the other.
Yeah. Meaning it's a fabric in between, not flesh to flesh. Okay. We'll move on. Omar Ma. We had said, Zemach Zirpana Vikari Kriyashma. We had Paskin that, yes, with your wife, you can turn your face away and recite Kriyashma according to Shmuel, even with somebody else. Meaning, we say that lying back-to-back contact with another person is okay because that won't cause sensations. But the Gemara asks, V'ha'ika agavos, even if it won't cause sensations, you lemaisa are lying exposed, you're lying in contact with the other person's backside. Right? So even if we'll say that it doesn't cause sensations, and here's the question we touched earlier, is that in itself not an erva? So let's remember, the distinction we drew above. To be touching another person's erva is a problem even if it does not cause sensations. Okay? We were just discussing whether back to back, meaning rear end to rear end, does that cause sensations? And we said no, it doesn't, according to each opinion how he maintains it. But forget the sensations. Is the rear end in itself not an erva? Is that not called nakedness? It should be also just on account of that. So nesayeh le'rabuna. Apparently, we see that it is not. Only the actual reproductive organ is an erva. The rear end is not. This supports Rav Huna. The Omar Rav Huna, as Rav Huna said, agavos ein bo mishum erva. No, a rear end is not considered erva. What's the implication? This certainly doesn't mean that you're allowed to look at it or expose it, as we'll see. We're going to really develop the details as we go along. But what it means that in this sense, once again, when there is no problem of sensations, or, as we'll see soon, another implication, it's not considered an erva for these purposes. We'll see some implications. Now, Leimer Sayyid Leimer Avuna. We can suggest a support for Avuna. Avuna said as follows. Ha'isha yesh... A Mishnah says as follows. This Mishnah would seem to also corroborate the ruling that rear end is not called an erva. Ha'isha yesheves v'koitza lo chalosa aruma. A woman is allowed to separate challah while she's naked. What's the significance of separating challah? When you separate challah, you make a bracha. So the Mishnah says that a woman is allowed to make a bracha if she's sitting while she's naked. Why? Because her face, this is a metaphor for the reproductive area of a woman, is covered in the ground. Meaning when a woman is sitting down, her actual erva is down in the ground. It's not exposed. And therefore, her erva is not exposed, she's allowed to make brachas. Avaloya ish. But with a man this won't work. If a man sits down on the ground, his erva is exposed nevertheless. And therefore a man can never make brachas naked. So, what are we inferring from this?
I'm
saying reproductive organ. No, when I say reproductive organ, I'm just trying to find a way of saying that the front of the body, the front, the part that, the external part of the, of the of that area. If that part is exposed, it would be awesome. Therefore, if a woman is standing, her erva is exposed. Erva means that area, the area where you cohabitate. So a woman is standing, it's also, if she sits down, that part becomes on the ground, it's not exposed, and therefore she can. Now what about the backside that remains exposed even if she sits down? So why is that not a problem? Apparently Rav Huna is right, that's not called an erva, and therefore it's okay for a woman to recite a bracha in this state. What's that? Not entirely. The person is sitting on the ground, but not entirely. This means the whole flesh of the area. So Tigmar Rav Nachman by Yitzchok. Rav Nachman by Yitzchok said not necessarily. It could be that we're talking about a situation where the ground is somewhat soft, and if she sits down, she can actually kind of bury herself. Yeah, sand. She sits entrenched in it, so it's mamish not exposed. But if she was sitting on hard ground, it might be a problem. So you can't prove it from here. Now here again, we have to stress.
Well,
don't think
about the mattress.
Right. Once she sinks into it somewhat, right, it would depend on the reality. So we're showing that no, you can't prove from here that the rear end is not an error. Now again, let's just note that here basically what we're saying is that a woman can make a bracha completely naked, as long as the actual erva is not exposed. So here again, this brings home the halacha that obviously if anybody else would be facing her, if anybody else would be around her, you would not be allowed to make a bracha, as we'll see later in the Gemara. We're talking about the most basic issa d'oraisa, that you cannot make a bracha or anything even if your own erva is exposed. Here we're talking about a woman who's by herself. Okay, so you cannot make a bracha even if your own erva is exposed. For these purposes we say that once a woman's erva is covered in the ground, it's okay even if the rest of her is naked, because no other part of her body is called an erva. So therefore, if she's alone, she's allowed to make a bracha in this state.
The rest.
Even with the rabba. So this is important to realize, because here we're coming to an important point, halacha l'maisa, that, tevilah, that's one implication. But here also, this doesn't sound very savory, but l'maisa, person might wonder, you're in a bathing suit, you're allowed to make a bracha?
you know, all your body exposed except the erva? The answer is yes. Here we're seeing that yes, a person whose body is totally exposed except the erva is allowed to make a bracha. It's certainly not the most respectable way of doing so. If you have an alternative, it's certainly good to put something on. But again, the question is, you're at the pool, right? You want to drink a cup of water. Can you make a bracha? The answer is yes. You have to cover your head. What?
In an underwear as well?
Yes.
Underwear.
Yes, as long as the erva is not exposed. The erva means only the reproductive part of the body.
Is that the
bidyevet? What's that? It's bidyevet, I wouldn't call it bidyevet. It's lechatchila, but better not to do it. Meaning, it's better to be, the more presentable you can, the more mahudar it is. Right?
But you've been saying the whole time that any piece of cloth, whether it's a bed sheet or a pajama, so underwear, we don't accept people walking around in their underwear for other reasons, but at the same time, it's still a piece of cloth that's covering you.
It's covering the nakedness. It's covering the basic nakedness,
right.
And that essentially is good enough. But again, like I said, it's certainly not the most respectful way of doing it, but when a person is stuck, whatever it is, this is the halacha. I want to show the other, what's that? So again, essentially we cannot say it's awesome. Essentially, yes. But it's certainly not the way to do it. Right?
Right.
You know what? Shemana Esrei, one minute. Right. Shemana Esrei might be different. You know what? I'm going to hold off on that. We'll get back to you on that. But we'll say other sorts of brachas, etc. You want to eat a sandwich, etc. Shemana Esrei, I want to double check. I just want to, since we're bringing this home strongly, because this is the halacha, and it's important to know what the halacha is. But at the same time, I want to show the other side of the coin. We'll end with this little incident that there was a. The Slabodka Yeshiva, the famous Slabodka Yeshiva, they were known to have cultivated basically what we're talking about now, but they very much focused on, they very much cultivated with Talmidim was consciousness of the greatness of what man is. That was how he rose, that was how he elevated his Talmidim. Instead of focusing on how rotten man is, he constantly harped on, the altar of Slabodka, he constantly harped on how sublime, how elevated, how lofty man is. And by doing that, by making people conscious of their greatness, he raised the whole generation of Gedolei Adar. Slabodka produced, it's mind-boggling, you know, the roster of who came out of there. From Rav Shachar Baran Kotler, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, you can go on and on. But whatever it is, so they were also known, Slabodka, for the extreme dignity with which they carried themselves. They always dressed very, very meticulously. They always were the epitome of dignity, of human dignity. To a level of greatness. I mean, not just a person who's into his looks. They were so makbid about it, to an extent that it was really beyond just the person caring about his looks. And it was human greatness. So, it was a student of Rav Meir Chodesh was from Leis Amidim Slabodka. He heard Rav Meir Chodesh, he was a Mashgiach in Hebron, heard him talking about the godless ha'avam, the greatness of man that you saw manifest in Slabodka. And he said, these are things that you just don't see today. You don't see people living in this way, on that lofty level. So the Talmud was very inspired. He came up to Rav Meir Chodesh, he said, where can I see it? I want to see what this looks like. You know, it's kind of like, so Rav Meir Chodesh thought a little bit, and he said, you know what, this still is, I remember one of you from the old school, one of the people who is still left, you can actually see this style of life, was a Jew by the name of Rabbi Zvulun Graz. He was the Rav of Rehovot, probably died 20 years ago, maybe even more than that, but not so long ago. Rabbi Zvulun Graz, he said, observe him a little bit, you'll see what I mean about human greatness, human dignity, right? The dignity with which they bore themselves. So this guy was determined, you know, he wanted to see history. This guy was determined. He somehow managed to arrange for himself to sleep at Rav Zvulun Graz's house. He wanted to observe him. Come up with some excuse, I don't know, he came to Rehovot, he was lost, I don't know, whatever it is. Somehow he was going to be there for the night. And they put him up on the couch. He said in the middle of the night he woke up and and Reb Zvulun Graz, in the middle of the night, he heard shuffling. Old man Zvulun Graz was coming out to the bathroom. Middle of the night. This fellow, you know, kind of feigned sleep, but he was intent on it. Reb Meir Chodesh told him, if you're around him, observe everything he does. So Zvulun Graz came out of the bathroom, talking about, you know, a very old man, right? Middle of the night. Came out of the bathroom, he stepped into the other room before going back to bed. Came back out, he was fully dressed with his frock coat, his tie, and his hat. He made the bracha of Asher Yotza. Then he got back into pajamas and he went back to bed. That was the human dignity of Slobodka. Okay. Well, it all goes together. It all goes together. Meaning, when you sense the lofty level at which we're living, you dare yourself in a different way. That whole dignified demeanor is coming from that sense. From realizing. Alright, so I just said that to counter. That again, the halacha is that you can make a bracha basically covered. But I wanted to say that story just to give us a perspective.